I corrected it so you didn't say it. I didn't know if you wanted to make a joke about it, but
I do. I totally do. It's brilliant.
Oh, okay, my bad. I was trying to protect you.
Welcome to Season 1, Episode 12 of the Swift Over Coffee podcast. I'm Paul Hudson.
And I'm Sean Allen.
So Sean, I saw on your YouTube channel you've got some big news around your job. What's been happening?
Yeah, so I'm leaving that job in like June or May. I've talked about this before. Part of my goals are to get a job at like a very, very large app. But the good thing and what I'm really, really excited about is that I get to hire my replacement because nobody else at the company knows anything about iOS. So it's on me to find that person. And I've said this time and time again about my story, how I got my start. Somebody took a chance on me when I was, you know, probably not quite qualified. And I'm looking to pay that back, pay that forward. So I get to hire somebody and help jumpstart their career. So I'm super excited about that. It's actually it's bittersweet though. Like as much as I love that I'm going to be able to help somebody, I already have. And I got about 150 responses off that video between emails and Twitter DMs. And a whole nother side topic is, wow, do developers need to learn how to market themselves? Anyway, that's a whole nother topic. I'll be doing a video on that shortly. But anyway, I have like four people already that I would love to do this with, you know? And sadly, I can only pick one. So that person is going to be awesome to help, but it's going to be heartbreaking to like say no to those others.
So the real question is, where are you going?
I don't know yet. I'm going to start
my
job search
yet.
Probably, you know, probably when I get back from London, you know, late March, early April, I'll start the job search, you know. But again, my requirements are a large app with millions of users that everyone has heard of. That's kind of my requirements. Pretty much open from there.
Well, it sounds like you'll be free just in time for Dub Week.
Yeah.
Dub month now.
A whole month of content for Dub. There you go. So, Paul, you are doing something pretty cool this month, too.
Well, this month and the several following months, I have just launched, today is Friday, the 1st of February as we record this, I just launched the 100 Days of Swift. It's a new scheme that kind of collects little videos and tests and chapters from around my site and puts them in one place day by day, broken up into a sensible curriculum by me. So hopefully now anyone can dive in and do 1 hour of Swift every day for the next sort of 3 and a bit months or so.
Yeah, I love that. That is the most common question that I know you get. I get it as well, is the how do I start? Like, where do I even begin? And this is a great path for them. So love what you're doing there.
Well, I think the problems I'm really trying to solve are twofold. Firstly, shiny object syndrome, where people see something else down the road a few hours later to distract them. I can just buy this book or buy that course or watch this video or whatever. And they never really make any progress. And the other thing is often called lone wolfing it, where people feel the need to solve these problems by themselves, when actually we've all been through this, we've all been through this pain, we all had the same questions before, and the more they try and spend time by themselves, the slower they're going to be. So I'm encouraging folks to talk about their learning as they go and provide a really clear 1 hour guided curriculum to try and solve those two problems.
Yeah, you described me to a T, that lone wolf syndrome. Paul, you're 4 years too late on releasing this. I'm not happy with you about that.
Must do better.
All right, Paul, so let's dive into the news. And the first topic we have is the most exciting one for me anyway, and that is the release of Xcode 10.2 beta. That was back on January 24th. Now, a new Xcode beta, that's cool and all, but what we really wanted was that Swift 5 goodness, and that shipped as part of this beta. So for folks like me who don't really want to mess with downloading that, you know, trunk development snapshots and activating in your Xcode settings, which is what you had to do before it was a part of official beta, now you can just simply go to Apple's developer site and download Xcode 10.2 beta.
And the timing of this was, I think, really critical. You know, if they didn't hit this release, it would have been dub. There's no other choice for them, quite frankly. And as things stand, Apple are tying it into this massive Mojave update that brings API stability for Swift. You know, 10.14.4 is a big set of changes. It's really not a stable release right now. There'd be a lot of polish in that before it's finally released. But Xcode itself is getting some polish too. They finally fixed that asset catalog bug that was plaguing older iOS versions. They added a forced night mode option for folks who prefer Mojave in light mode but want Xcode in dark mode. And they even made Xcode respect the Mojave accent color for its breakpoints and co-completion. So it'll do like, you know, green or pink, whatever you want in your breakpoints now.
Yeah, that's a nice little touch. I actually was late to the party. I just downloaded it this morning. We're recording this on Friday, and but I wanted to play with it over the weekend and get ready for my Swift 5 content, so super pumped to dive into it.
Go on, change your breakpoint colors.
Red is what I got from my accent, so it'll be pretty alarming. Really alarming breakpoints.
Well, you know, Louis Dehoe made it. He's massive in the Swift community, doing things like panel kit and source editor work, and he was the one who built that for the Xcode team as his first, I think, shipping feature for Xcode since he joined Apple.
Nice, yeah. I saw him tweet that out on Twitter. I think it was it in response to you, or I saw him tweet it somewhere.
He did quote tweet me, yeah.
Oh, nice. So from that super happy positive news, some shady news here. We got the following news that both Facebook and Google were using their enterprise distribution certificates to install apps on devices that didn't belong to employees. So Apple said nope and promptly terminated those certificates, which in turn meant that the internal apps of both companies immediately stopped working. Now, I know that what both companies did was really, really shady, but was Apple's response, too far?
So, in case listeners missed the news, both Facebook and Google had installed apps on users' phones, like not folks who work for their companies, to monitor phone usage. You know, Facebook was tracking all the networking people were doing, effectively spying on what they were doing. And they were actually paying the users $20 a month in return for this massive invasion of their privacy. Now, this was obviously pretty awful behavior from both companies. And they absolutely went against the enterprise license agreement from Apple. But should Apple have such control over devices across the whole world, they can literally kill parts of the internal workings of these two massive companies at the flick of a switch?
I mean, this is obviously tricky. My kind of take on it is, if you're going to rely on a third-party platform, for a big part of your business, which Apple is that third-party platform, you should probably follow their rules. And if you don't follow the rules and you get smacked, like what were you expecting? Like, can you really complain?
Well, let me put it this way. Apple's vision, Apple's, dream, is that everyone buys iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple Watch, and so forth, and they just dominate the market. And if that happened, they'd be in such an astonishing position of power over every other company in the world. They could completely cripple any company at any point. Now, most of us have had situations, or at least seen situations, where Apple's app review team made a bad call. They took something off the App Store for the wrong reasons and were forced to reinstate it later after a miniature PR storm. But what happens when you do that for something that keeps your business literally working?
Yeah, I mean, these are, like I said, these are very touchy, weird topics here. So we all, first of all, let's say we all agree that what Facebook and Google did was very wrong. Like, we're not sticking up for that at all. But the gray area and the more nuanced question is, how much power should Apple have, when they control the platform? And, this may kind of bleed into your thoughts on like free markets. And, we didn't really want to go down that rabbit hole for the next 20 minutes, but we do want to hear what you think. So tweet us at Swift Over Coffee. Should Apple have this much power?
Yeah, if you agree, tweet us. If you disagree, leave a 5-star review.
There you go. We got to get those review ass in every episode. Next up, we have some great news about the upcoming UIConf that takes place in Berlin this coming May. They've announced that they're going to go with an all-female speaker lineup, which is the first time I've heard of a conference doing this. And I think that's great. And Paul, I know you're a huge advocate for this, so you must have loved this.
I certainly am. And a number of people, nearly all male, have said it's deeply sexist to make this move. Although I'd really be genuinely interested to hear how many of them have actually worked to improve equality in our community, rather than just complaining when someone else takes action. I think we need to accept the fact that even today, female developers are commonly treated unfairly, paid less, and promoted less than male developers. And that's not my opinion, it's not a debate to be had, it's proven by many, many studies again and again and again. And we've tried so many ways to encourage more women to come to conferences, or speak on stage, to join our community, but none have really been a spectacular success. We don't have anything like the number of female speakers that we ought to have, given the number of how people are in our community. So I am really genuinely excited about this from UIConf. I think it has the potential to bring some serious change. I think for sure never again can a conference use the excuse that they couldn't find a diverse group of speakers.
As always, now it's time for our picks. What do you got for us this episode, Paul?
So my pick this week is something I first dabbled with months ago, but only recently actually started using in a real project. And that is something called key value pairs, which were, for some baffling reason, called dictionary literals before Swift 5, which is so confusing, and you'll see why. Because they're like regular dictionaries, but they have a few special properties that really set them apart. Most importantly, you can add duplicate keys if you want, and the order in which you add things is preserved. Both things regular dictionaries just don't do.
So wait a minute. One of those things sounds confusing to me, at least off the top of my head, but the other sounds great. So the thing that is confusing is why would duplicate keys be good? But the other thing, the order preservation, I like that. That sounds really good.
Well, I'll give you an example of that in just a moment, because it was what actually led me to key value pairs in the first place. But before I do that, I want to say just briefly that these features have a cost. These extra pieces of functionality aren't somehow free. Key value pairs are actually implemented as an array of tuples, where each tuple has a key and a value. So if you want to find one of those keys, it has to look through all the elements in the array until it finds the one you asked for. So in big O terms, it's order N rather than order 1, like a regular dictionary.
And that can be quite a big difference in performance. For those out there not super familiar with big O notation, order N means the time it takes to complete depends on the number of items, and it scales linearly. Right. An example of this would be a data structure with 10 items being roughly 10 times faster than one with 100 items, you know, just to put it simply. Order one, which is often referred to as constant time, means it doesn't matter how many items are in that data structure, the lookup time will be the same. And as you can imagine, constant time usually means great performance.
You know, Sean, you're pretty good at this. You should make some videos about it.
Okay, I will.
Well, what you end up with is sort of like the unholy love child of dictionaries and arrays. You know, it's the magic of podcasts. We haven't got any visuals for you here, folks. I'll leave it up to your sources and imaginations to fill that one in.
So you were saying you're using these in real projects now, right? That's where we started off, Paul. Let's get right. You back on track.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I was writing a small tool to manipulate my Swift projects, and I wrote a really simple command line parser. Now, I know a few of these already exist, but it's an interesting challenge, and I had some spare time, so I gave it a shot. And I soon realized the problem. I want to have parameters being typed in from the command line, like dash dash directory equals whatever, more than once. So I could ask it to scan several source directories at once and then do stuff. But when that got put into a dictionary, of course, it would only let me store one directory key at a time, because, of course, dictionaries don't let you have duplicate keys.
Okay, so now that duplicate key thing is starting to make sense, I get you.
Well, exactly. Key value pairs totally solve the problem. And I wasn't exactly working with huge arrays, so the order N runtime wasn't a problem, but it did allow me to store multiple directories to scan and remember the order they were passed in. So I could, do the first one first, second one second, and so forth. Anyway, it was just a bit of fun coding, but it gave me a chance to really use a piece of Swift I'd only ever tried in test code. Anyway, what's your pick this week, Sean?
My pick this week is based on a couple of articles by Jacob Turek about handling designs that can be, let's just say, a bit much, right? I'm sure many of you out there have seen these. A designer hands you a beautiful design with all kinds of amazing animations, transitions, like all kinds of crazy stuff going on. You know the kind of stuff you see on Dribbble, but you never actually see them in real apps. You just see them as really cool Dribbble concepts. There's kind of a reason for that. But that's kind of what the gist of these articles and the topic I want to cover today is. How do you compromise and work well with designers when you ultimately have to, dial that design back a bit for the actual implementation? Because oftentimes, if you did take all that time to implement these awesome animations, you're probably going to miss deadlines or go over budget.
Hold up a second. I am sure the Sean Allen of 2018 would have said, just use Lottie. That fancy pants Airbnb framework you said was amazing for automatically handling animations.
The Sean of 2019 actually says that now. So in the app I'm working on now, we use Lottie heavily for the animations, but Lottie can't do every single type of animation. And to be honest with you, we're using animations as like an example, just kind of plug in any kind of crazy thing a designer could bring you. Again, I'm sure sometimes you've seen a design and you're like, that looks great. That's going to take a hell of a long time to build. So just substitute that in for this animation is just one example. But the reason I want to discuss this is for kind of the lesser experienced developers out there. Like, I remember when I was starting out as independent contracting and I would run into situations like this, I would often overwork myself and try to deliver that crazy design because, at the end of the day, I wanted to deliver. I wanted to do, what they said. But, now in my older age, I've learned that's probably not the best thing because what would happen would be I would spend too much time on those animations. I would fall behind on the rest of the app because I was playing with animations for far too long. And of course, like I said, I know that is a mistake. I know that now, but a junior developer may not.
The problem with animations is that they feel really good. when you get them right. They really come alive when you get them right. They're really pleasing to use, particularly if they're interactive. You know, you touch and swipe and it just feels great. I think it's really easy to get addicted to playing around with them.
And I think it's addicting to build them. Like, they're fun to build too. Like, yes, they're fun to play with and they're fun to build. And when you do build one that works exactly right, like, it's a proud feeling. And you're like, wow, I built something really cool. But here's the lesson I learned, like, from that experience is, you know, you have to have that difficult conversation sometimes where you tell the designer, like, hey, we need to change or dial back this animation or flat out not do it at all. You know, it's too much time and effort, you know, for our deadline and budget. And with experience, you know, you'll have a better understanding of the big picture and how long it takes to build certain things. So you'll be more confident in having those discussions. And here's a line I use all the time at like my current company, because this happens a lot, because I constantly have to tell our designer, like, I kind of have to reel them in a little bit. And I understand this is only applicable if you're freelancing or on a very small team. But in meetings, I always find myself saying, you know, you have to remember, I am one developer building the entire app, you know? So as cool as these animations and transitions look, you know, they probably aren't the top priority when you're trying to launch an MVP or 1.0 and build, again, the entire app.
Right. You know, figuring out how to balance your time is tricky, particularly when, you know, that actual deadline of yours, you know, make this thing get out to the world, is coming closer every day.
Yeah, deadlines always creep up on you faster and faster. Like, oh, I got a month. Next thing you know, I have 7 days. What? Like, what happened?
It's like a classic Douglas Adams quote. I love the sound of deadlines whizzing by.
whooshing over my head or something.
That's
like
the
that.
One, yeah.
But yeah, so this article goes on to talk about helping educate your designers around some common topics, things like them designing super custom navigation or things that go against, you know, the common iOS paradigms. You know, ask anyone out there who had a custom UI navigation bar how their day went when the Notch was released. You know, I know the YouTube app was messed up for 2 weeks, and that's YouTube. Like, that's a big app.
I have done this so many times, had the same conversation. We face requests like, oh, can we put a logo in the top left corner that goes back to the home page when you tap it? I mean, yeah, it's easy to do. Of course it is easy to do, for sure. But it's also a web way of thinking. And the strange thing is that these designers are often heavy users of Apple devices, you know, Macs for a long, long time, iOS, whatever. You'd think they really breathe the human interface guidelines by now.
And that's a good point. As a developer, it's very wise of you to be very familiar with the human interface guidelines and know all these common paradigms so you can have these discussions. And the last example we'll talk about, which I often find frustrating when working with designs, is that they don't account for unusual data, like really long word names, or if you're building a graph, it'll be the perfect data that fits the graph perfectly, you know? The designer gets to create these beautiful designs with data that looks just right, or, you know, the perfect length of lorem ipsum text, you know. Meanwhile, us developers, we have to account for all the crazy edge cases, which is fine, but sometimes in order to accommodate those edge cases, like a really, really long name or maybe a localization into German or something, we have to alter that design because the designer didn't account for that. And we don't want to get in the habit of developers altering designs. So really, that's the whole point here. It's a really good thing to build a great relationship with your designer so you can have these conversations with them. And really, at the end of the day, you're helping them help you. And like I said, we're all just trying to build the best product possible. We're all on the same team.
And let's bring episode 12 of this podcast to its crashing conclusion with our open ballot. This time our question is, apart from Swift and framework knowledge, what are key skills for iOS developers? And like most of the time, we've had many, many responses from listeners. Thank you so much. We've picked out as many as we can. We'll try and whiz through them quickly. In the section of learning, we had Kristaps Grinberg saying, to learn something new every day, starting from marketing, design, support, sales, and more, there are so many skills needed to succeed in business. And Yariv Nassim said, learning how to learn is probably the top skill for any engineer. And learning how to learn, you know, that's a fascinating one because we don't even think about it. We like to just dive in. It's like building some furniture from IKEA. We think, the manual, who needs a manual? Give me a drill and a hammer and I'll get this futon together in no time at all. And then, of course, 6 hours later, we've got just chunks of wood and lots of plasters on or Band-Aids on our fingers. And it's the same with coding. People don't want to stop and think about, how do I do better? How do I behave better? How do I learn better? So it really is an important skill.
Yeah, I love both these answers. I actually said this in one of my recent videos about, you know, how to gain confidence as a developer, and where I was saying like learning how to learn is probably the top skill in my opinion for the engineer. So pretty much exactly what Yarif just said. But I also want to echo Chris Dapps, because I do believe having skills outside of just coding, like he mentions marketing, design, sales, because I came from a marketing background in sales and I'm a design enthusiast. So I absolutely agree that having skills outside of coding is super valuable as well.
We had stacks of responses about working well with others. Zach Valgu from one of my favorite podcasts, Fireside Swift, love your work, Zach. He says, communication and patience are at the top of my list. The ability to convey your thoughts and ideas while tracking down a hard-to-find bug or implementing a complicated new feature is incredible. Antoine van der Lee from Swiftly says, willingness to learn and be open for feedback. Great ways to improve yourself. Jean Delisa says, the kindergarten metric is the most important. The ability to play well with others in the sandbox. Love that answer. And Paul Ardeleanu, one of the true kings of TDD in our community, says, the best skill to master, especially when working with rock stars, is empathy.
Yeah, I love this topic, and I've said this before. One of the things I look for most when I go to a new company is the team. Like, that is the most important thing to me. And you know, the ability to play well with others in the sandbox, you couldn't have said it better. I love that answer as well.
You know, one of the questions I like to ask, you know, that the, at the end of an interview, they say, do you have any questions for us? One of the questions I love to ask, and it usually throws them a little bit, is to say, you know, what is the single most important thing you're working towards right now as a company? Because it's very easy to say, oh yeah, my backlog is A, B, and C. Anyone can do that. But to know well as a team what the goal is, to go in one direction as a group, is significantly harder. You know, to communicate that and understand that and distribute that and disseminate that effectively is very, very hard. So I if someone says, you know, I'm not really sure, it says to me they don't work terribly well with others. They don't get information out there very cleanly. So I'm not terribly comfortable with that company. Moving on, we have some answers about time and project management. Oscar Alvarez says, to me, it's really important to communicate properly with a product owner about what's possible, what might not be a good idea, and more important, the edge cases you know exist and they don't see. And Nelson Taylor says, project management, specifically strategies like Scrum and GTD. Much like managing a load of data, managing your day to day is crucial. For the sake of full disclosure, it's worth saying that Nelson made what I think is a wonderful Freudian slip here. He said scum rather than scrum, which I think is to describe scrum for so many people yeah. out there. You know, and what I find is, of course, that many companies don't use Scrum, they use Scrum Butt. You know, Scrum But we don't do stand up, Scrum But we don't do retro, Scrum Butt, Scrum Butt, Scrum Butt. And I'm fine with that, but I'd rather at least folks knew all the options out there and were able to cherry pick what suits their environment rather than to sort of make up as they go along.
Yeah, I like this whole concept of time and project management, and it kind of, you know, builds on what I was talking about earlier when I was talking about the designers, of how as a junior developer, like some of my first contracts, I would just build whatever they put in front of me without taking the bigger picture into account. And that often, you know, led to me falling behind on the project. So having that big picture and understanding the project as a whole, and like Oscar says, being able to say, hey, this is a good idea, we shouldn't do this, or here's the edge case you don't see. Again, that's super important.
Moving on, we have answers about design. Supin Revi says, since iOS applications are consumer-facing products, it's very important to know about the UX and UI aspect. And Paul Wilkinson says, attention to detail, particularly regarding UI, UX. Apple strives for elegance and polish. Our app should too.
Yeah, this is perfect. And maybe this is a controversial opinion, but I think developers shun design too much. I've talked to a lot of developers that are like, I'm not a designer, I don't care about it, they just want to build things. But especially if you're working in the Apple ecosystem, like they've said, like that's kind of what Apple's like built on. So you should have, I'm not saying you have to be a professional designer, but you should have a concept and a grasp of what good UI UX is, and kind of like we mentioned earlier, the concepts of the human interface guidelines, so you can help guide the product to look like an iOS app.
I do wonder how much design is actually kind of baked into iOS developers. Like, they understand it unconsciously, rather. You know, you could say things like, oh, yes, let's add some negative space here, or let's adjust the kerning there. And they might say, well, I don't know what those things are. Fine. But they'd know it and they see it. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are so many subtle design cues in iOS. Things like, you know, when the corners of things are gently rounded, it normally means it's tappable, for example. That we just accept that in realizing it's there, it always has been there, and it's kind of soaked into us by accident. So even though they think they're art designers, maybe they know more than they realize.
True, and maybe I'm just a little jaded by the recent, kind of what I said earlier, dealing with like over 100 responses to that job offer and looking at, you know, some apps, and don't get me wrong, I know they're junior developers, but it was rough, that's all I'll say. The designs were not the greatest.
We had three answers about tools. Ryan says, know that not everything is solved in Xcode. expect a working knowledge in JavaScript, PHP, SQL, SQLite, etc. Luciano Almeida says, I think one good thing to know that is the tooling around the iOS ecosystem. For example, Instruments is awesome for so many things and sometimes can help a lot. We have to know it exists and how to use it. And Andrew Miocke says, Git and command line. Now, obviously, I like Git and command line. I like Scrum. I like those things so much. I wrote a whole book in them called Beyond Code. But I want to disagree a little bit with Ryan. You know, I'm not saying that everything is solved inside Xcode, but I think it's probably a bridge too far to expect a working knowledge of PHP. I do encourage folks to explore the wonderful world beyond Swift and Xcode. Go and try Python. Go and try Rust. Go and try Haskell. Go and try PHP. Fine. But I wouldn't necessarily expect that a working knowledge of PHP or SQL from developers, because SQL is just one of many, many things. Could be no SQL is as important in the company. So be flexible here, I think.
Yeah, tooling is something I need to improve on to kind of like touch on each one of these topics. Yes, everything is solved in Xcode for me. Git and command line, I definitely need to improve my skills there. I use the GitHub GUI that, you know, GitHub actually puts out, and that handles like 98% of what I need to do. So that's what I use there. Instruments I do use like for the memory manager and all that stuff. But yeah, I agree tooling's important. I need to improve on it.
The thing is, it's about what we know and what we're used to, right? You know, tooling is not exciting, bluntly.
No,
we want,
it's not.
It's there to get a job done. We want to commit the code. We want to do a thing, right? And I use Git on the command line exclusively. And the nice folks at Tower sent me a Git Tower license to look at. And I want to try it. I'm going to give it a try. I'm sure it's very, very nice. But everything I know, all my muscle memory is use the command line and Git, because that's what I've always done. And it's not an interesting problem for me to solve to move that to a GUI, if that makes sense.
Right.
And let's end on this one here from Evgeny Kodikin, Objective-C.
I don't know what this Objective-C is that you speak of, but I did think it was funny that he, his smiley face that he put after, they put a little winking face after the Objective-C, and the smile is a square bracket. I don't know if that was an intentional little extra thing there, but that's what I thought of as soon as I saw that. It brought back nightmares.
I think Objective-C is Swift for old people.
Makes sense.
I should clarify, I've got a lot of love for Objective-C.
So that's going to wrap up this episode, but as always, we want to leave you with something to think about, and that is next episode's open ballot. And that is, if you could change one thing about Swift, what would that be? What do you got, Paul?
No, please, you go first, Sean.
No, I respect my elders, Paul. You first.
tell you what, on three, okay, we'll both say our thing out loud.
All right, you ready?
One, two, three.
Strength.
Jinx.
All right. Yeah, you owe me a beer next time. When I come to London, you owe me a beer. Oh, no, you said jinx first.
Damn right.
I owe you a beer. All right.
Fantastic. You could buy me one of those expensive British beers.
All right. So as always, if you would love to give us a review, we would love you back in return. That helps us out a ton. And you can follow us on Twitter @SwiftOverCoffee. We'll catch you in the next one.
Bye.